Hey there, everybody. It is November 1st, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line and send that email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an amazing show we have for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. In 1982, Dr. Howard Dean was elected to the Vermont House of Representatives, followed by three successful elections to the post of Lieutenant Governor. Then, from 1991 to 2003, he served as governor of our great state of Vermont, making him the second longest-serving governor in the history of Vermont. He has been the chairman of the National Governors Association, a candidate for president of the United States in 2004, and chairman of the Democratic National Committee from 2005 to 2009. In 2004, he founded the group Democracy for America, which raises awareness on the most relevant social issues of our times, helps elect progressive candidates, and, it should be noted, was the first carbon-neutral political action committee in the United States. Governor Howard Dean, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Geez, what an introduction that was. Thanks very much.
I had to cut that down, Governor. There was a lot more to say.
Lord.
Well, first and foremost, happy early birthday to you, sir.
Well, thank you. Although at this age, it's not so, they're not so welcome anymore.
But still we celebrate. Still we celebrate.
We do. A birthday which shall remain nameless. Numberless.
It's number 30 yet again, Governor
Dean.
Thank you very much. Well, first, we have to do some Vermont pride for a second. Say that you, Governor Dean, were head of our Vermont tourism industry. How would you sell Vermont to visitors?
Well, I mean, in terms of pride, I'd certainly sell. I do. Actually, the industry is selling itself to LGBT couples, which I think is great. This is sort of a couple state. It's really interesting. We don't have that much of a single scene, either heterosexual or homosexual.
Right.
So, I'd sell it, I think, the same way I would to heterosexual couples, which is this is a family state. It's a great place to have a quiet vacation if you have kids. Come on up. It's a great place. Weddings are a big deal here, and lots of people with no connections to Vermont whatsoever come and have weddings here. Basically, the truth is you more or less sell Vermont to gay couples the same way you sell it to straight couples.
Absolutely.
It's a family place. If you're into casinos or a huge nightlife scene, probably not, but it's just a really wonderful, wonderful place to get to know your significant other and spend time with your kids.
Now, how do the people at the top of the state talk about us here at the bottom of the state?
I know that sometimes the southern part of the state feels neglected, but particularly with Governor Shumlin in office, that's certainly never the case.
No.
So they don't really, I mean, there's a little bit of difference in the tourism industry. I think the tourism industry is even more important in the southern part of the state than it is in the northern part of the state. But there really isn't that much of a difference.
Talk to me about Vermont politics. Have you noticed a difference? Do Vermont politics feel inherently different than other states?
Oh, this is totally a different state than almost any place else. The only other state I'd even consider living in would be Hawaii.
Wow.
This is a great state. It's the people are really connected to each other. I call it, much to people's bemusement, a libertarian state, which is also communitarian.
Nice.
That is, we mind our own business. We care about our individual rights. Everybody has some say in what goes on around them. On the other hand, when something bad happens, we're all in it together immediately. There's no state like this. It's one of the reasons I'm so much for the 2-year term.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't want to hear those ads and they don't like the campaigns every 2 years, but it keeps politicians close to the people that they govern. And the people they govern are more responsible here. People understand that you don't get something for nothing, that if you want some programs, the taxes have to go up. If you want to cut taxes, then you got to get rid of some programs. The political debate is much more honest in Vermont than it is just about in any other state I've ever been to. So there really is no comparison. I hate to be a terrible chauvinist about Vermont. I do like all the other states, but
I'm giving you that opportunity.
But I am going to be. I mean, there is no state like this state, and we ought to do whatever we can to keep it special.
I will say it is a little funny that my term on the Brattleboro Select Board is 1 year longer than your term as governor.
Well, I turned out that 3-year terms in the Burlington mayorship was a mistake.
Because indeed.
We ended up with a mayor that was really a problem, and we were stuck with him for longer than we should have been. So I don't know. I think 2-year terms are fine. If local people want to change it, that's their business. But Also, in a position like the select board, you're really much closer to the people even than, say, governor being in Montpelier, because there you live with what the select board does every single week.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, I did mention in your intro that you are the second longest serving Vermont governor.
Actually, not true.
It's not true.
No, you said I was the second longest serving governor in the history of the state of Vermont. Not true. I'm the longest serving governor in the history of the state of Vermont. However.
Oh, there we go.
This state was an independent republic for 14 years between 1777 and 1791. And Thomas Chittenden was the first governor of Vermont, and he served for 17 one-year terms. But he served 9 of those terms before the Vermont was a state, and then 8 years as governor when Vermont was a state. And so technically, I served 12 years, or almost 12 years, and he only served 8 for the state of Vermont, but in fact, as far as Vermont goes, he served 17.
Governor, there is a lot on the internet that now needs to be changed.
Yes, that's true. I am the longest serving governor in the history of the state of Vermont, but I'm the second longest governor who ever served Vermont.
All right, I'm going to get on that. I will take it upon myself to correct
it's
that.
It's a great history lesson. It's actually, I like it when people make the mistake because it's fun to teach them something about Vermont.
It's a little nerve-wracking when Howard Dean corrects you, though, on air. It's a little nerve-wracking. Well, the year is 2000. The Vermont Supreme Court has told the Vermont legislature, look, you need to do something to address the unconstitutionality of same-sex couples not being able to get married. Walk me through how you as governor even begin to craft a response to this.
Well, it was a real shock because we were the first state in the country whose court decided this. Hawaii actually decided something like this, but the court actually ordered gay marriage and the legislature repealed it. So we're really the first state that dealt with the notion that gay people had to have the same rights as everybody else.
Indeed.
And that was really the foundation of the court decision. There was no way we were going to get marriage through at that time. We were the first state in the country to deal with this. Even the legislature and the vice chair of the Judiciary Committee, which did this, was Bill Lippert, who was an openly gay, one of the few openly gay men. Mm-hmm. Although the first openly gay person in the Vermont legislature was a Brattleboro guy, Ron Squires.
Yes, of course.
But there haven't been many openly gay people until recently. And Bill Lippert was a tremendously courageous guy, and Tom Little, who's a Republican, who chaired the Judiciary Committee, and the two of them actually wrote the civil unions bill and invented the term civil unions, because of course there was nothing before that. So they invented it, and they passed it through the House, which was very difficult. It passed by just a handful of votes. And by that time, I had I'm 64 years old, as you pointed out, or almost 64. And I grew up in an era where homophobia was just the way it was.
Right.
And, in schools and middle schools and so forth and so on. So it took me a while to get used to all this, but I fully got on board when I realized, the people who I think had the biggest decision, biggest say in this were actually PFLAG.
Yeah.
Parents and friends of lesbians and gays. And they, because their tactic was, well, if your son was gay, would you love him any less? And of course, the answer to that is no. And from 98% of parents, and furthermore, lots of people do have gay kids, and nobody says anything or didn't used to say anything about it.
Right.
In those days. So I, over time, became persuaded. I mean, I was going to, of course, obey the court, but I, over time, became persuaded this was a cause worth fighting for. And it was tough sledding. I mean, we really had to fight like hell. And you can remember how horrendous the atmosphere was. Even in laid-back Vermont, there was a tremendous amount of anger and hate in that anti-gay campaign, much of which was spurred by out-of-state people, but still.
Talk to me about that piece, the out-of-state piece, because I would imagine people were weighing in not from all over the country, but you were just getting it from all over the world.
Well, not so much all over the world, because I think, most people didn't know anything about it.
Right.
Most of the European countries in Canada were ahead of us at the time.
Indeed.
So the people who would pay attention to in the English language world weren't weighing in, except for the Americans, of course. But we were getting crank calls from all over the country. I actually answered some of them because they were so bad in the governor's office that every staff person, even if they were a senior staff person, would take turns answering the phone. So I actually answered for a while, which is pretty funny since most of the people who got on the phone had no idea that it was actually me.
Right.
I'd say, yes, sir, I'll tell the governor. I'll let him know.
I'll pass that on.
Yeah, that's right. I'll pass that right on.
And were other governors weighing in as well?
No, most of them, I think what they were mostly interested in was what's going to happen when this happens to our place. And, you know, the Republicans, of course, were not that interested because they didn't think it was ever going to happen there.
Right.
Although it did happen when Romney was governor.
Indeed.
Romney at that point was really, it was a moderate. This was before his conversion to right-wingism. And he grumbled about it, but I heard a really interesting story from a guy who was close to him who said, you know, do you want to be the person who tries to stop this and goes down in history as the Lester Maddox of Vermont,
right.
I mean of Massachusetts.
Of Massachusetts, yeah.
And he let it go. He couldn't have overturned a court decision, but he could have done some administrative things to make it essentially impossible to have a marriage in Massachusetts when he was governor,
right.
A few years after us.
Well, one of the topics that we often talk about on this show over the past 4 years is just the idea of battling complacency, that concept that if you're in one of the more progressive states like Vermont, that it's all too easy to just keep your focus locally and not reach out to other states where these civil rights struggles are far more stark.
Well, that's important not to do that. We're very lucky here.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, for example, there's four referenda on the ballot. Maryland and Maine have a real chance of by referendum adopting gay marriage. That hasn't happened in a state before. So that's important. And those things are, you know, in the community and even those in the straight community who believe in equal rights for everybody. We ought to be trying to help out in Maine and Maryland, and there's the usual anti stuff in Minnesota, and I forgot what the fourth state is.
Right.
But you know, we are making progress. And one of the things I tell people, especially in the progressive end of the spectrum, is not to get discouraged when you hear these kind of right wing hate groups who manage to elect presidents. Because when George Bush, who's arguably the most conservative president in the last 100 years, came into office, we had one state with marriage equality, which was Vermont with civil unions. And when when George Bush left office, there were 8 states with marriage equality.
Right.
So you make progress not because the government wants you to make progress. You make progress from the ground up, and that's why it really is important. Not to just say, well, this is okay. If I'm gay and I want to be married, then I have to live in the Northeast or California or Iowa. This is a basic human right, and we need to fight for this everywhere in America.
Indeed. Indeed.
And eventually we're going to win this fight because people under 35 don't give a damn about this issue, and they think it's a civil rights issue of their age, and it is. You know, they think this is a perfectly reasonable thing. There's no debate under 35 about whether gay people should be able to get married or not.
It just is. It just
yeah.
is. Yeah. Well, we would be remiss, and I'm not sure if you heard, it is indeed an election year this year. And as a dean of students at a local college, I certainly am pretty obsessed with how do we get young people out to those polls. Governor Howard Dean, how do we get young people out to those polls?
Well, you know, they're motivated by the same things everybody else is. I think they're certainly motivated by what's going on the right and by Governor Romney's apparent complete lack of any program whatsoever. He's now running ads in Ohio saying Jeep is going to move their production to China. Now, he just made that up. Chrysler has denied it. I mean, he's just making stuff up at this point. So, you know, I obviously that motivates people. You don't, I mean, you may or may not be 100% thrilled with President Obama, but he's certainly a tremendous amount better than the alternative.
Indeed.
The other thing that motivates people is stuff on the ground. There's a lot of grassroots stuff, great candidates, and if you go out and vote for some of those candidates and work for a referendum issue, for example, the Maine referendum, you're going to vote for pretty much the Democratic ticket right up and down the because the Democratic ticket really isn't much more in line with where the American people are than the Republicans are.
Yeah, we covered on last week's show that the Log Cabin Republicans issued kind of a conditional endorsement of Mitt Romney, saying, yes, he doesn't really support us on civil rights, but he'll probably be better for the economy, and he would do better than previous Republican presidents for the gay community, which is as conditional of an endorsement, I think, as you could come up with.
Probably actually not true either. George Bush actually appointed the first full-time gay ambassador, which
right.
is a little-known fact. Bill Clinton appointed one, but he couldn't get confirmed by the Senate because of Jesse Helms. When Bush appointed somebody, he actually did get confirmed, and then the Romanian, he went to Eastern Europe, which is not known for his tolerance, and there was a big rhubarb after that. But, you know, so I would argue that it's highly unlikely that Romney is not a guy with a lot of spine.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's so cowed by the right wingers. He relied on them so much. You know, he called himself a severe conservative. So I don't think you're going to see any great courageous stands from Mitt Romney should we have the misfortune of having him as our president.
And there's still a lot more work to do in the next couple of weeks to get the word out there, is there not?
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot. But you know, New Hampshire is a really serious state.
Oh yeah.
That could determine the election. So, I mean, that's very, very important. I've seen some very good polls from there, but the margin is narrow, both in the governor's race. The other thing is you have a bunch of certified lunatics running the House in New Hampshire.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, they're crazy people. I think they're the most crazy legislature in the entire country. That distinction does not belong to Texas or Alabama. It belongs to New Hampshire. And you really need some fundamental changes in New Hampshire, where I'm sure you have some listeners, that a lot of people who think Vermont's going to be fine, which we are,
yeah,
are going to go out and work like crazy in New Hampshire to bring sanity back to their program.
It's quite the confluence of geography to be down here in Brattleboro, drive, you know, a half mile into New Hampshire, and suddenly its lawn signs are quite abundant. It's really
right.
Unbelievable to be right next door.
Yeah, and plus you've got the Elizabeth Warren Scott Brown race down in Massachusetts.
That's on the other side.
Are going to be really important for that race. I think Elizabeth's going to win that race, and she's going to be a terrific United States Senator. And you know, hopefully people are out down there working for her in the last week or so.
A lot of work to do. Well, let me get your last opinion on. So I'm on the Brattleboro Select Board. What's my next step?
I don't know.
what do I do next?
What you're interested in. I mean, if you're interested in state politics, you ought to run for the House. But otherwise, you know, there's a lot of good work to be done in Brattleboro, and Brattleboro has always been a cutting-edge town.
I'm ready to be the first out governor. Is it time?
There we go. Absolutely. There's no reason not to do that.
Okay. I mean,
that's just a matter of time. I'm very hopeful that Tammy Baldwin's going to be the first publicly out senator.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And she'd be great, too, and I think she has a great shot at winning.
So much to keep our eyes on. Governor Howard Dean, a hero throughout the LGBT community. My hope is that you know that. When you signed that legislation, you signed the country's first civil unions legislation into law. That is something that we can correct the internet on being the longest serving governor, but that's something we don't need to correct. It's pretty clear that you really took a bold step when others shied away from it.
Well, you know, the great thing about it is it was just as great for me as it was for the LGBT community, because I learned a lot about myself. I think a lot of people who've been in office for a long period of time, they tend to duck decisions like that because they're afraid of re-election. And if you're in politics, you need to take positions like that. And if you don't get elected, too bad.
Right.
But there's been a lot of people who've been in places like that for 30 years and gotten nothing done, and nobody's ever thought about it twice. I learned a lot about myself during that struggle. Very worthwhile thing for me to undergo,
yeah.
Leaving aside what it did for an important part of the Vermont population. It did a lot for me as a straight politician to stand up with you on a civil rights bill. You know, you don't get that chance in politics very often. Usually it's, you know, a little bit about money or some program and how much is going to go there. But a fundamental human decency bill doesn't come to the legislature that often, and I was privileged to be able to stand with you.
Oh, well, it is truly our honor. I would be remiss if I did not point out that the Schneck family enjoys you immensely on Morning Joe.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
We enjoy it immensely. Governor Howard Dean, what an honor. Thank you so much for everything you've done and everything you continue to do to get these voices out there, because that's really how we're going to make a difference.
Yes, we are.
Sir,
thanks a lot.
And a happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
All the best. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
As a little girl, I came down to the water with a little stone in my hand, and it would shimmer and sing, and I knew everything, yeah. As a little girl, I came down. In a little while, I got steeped in authority. Knows what went wrong when there is nothing so cruel than to bury that jewel. And it was mine all along, and I'm gonna find it.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, you thought we were done. It was just the culmination of the show was Governor Howard Dean, but we got more. We got so much more for you. So let's welcome yet another guest. Nathan Mansky is the founder and executive director of I'm From Driftwood, a nonprofit organization which collects and shares lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer stories from all walks of life to help deepen our understanding of each other. He has a very special place in our gay rainbow. This show is so gay heart, and we'll tell you why. Nathan Mansky, welcome back to this show, So Gay.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. I think it's been roughly 2 years.
It's getting on. It's getting on. It was actually since your first AIDS life cycle experience when we talked to you out there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So just over a year.
Dramatic,
I guess.
And you went back to the AIDS life cycle, did you not?
Yeah, I did. I couldn't not go back. It was such an incredible experience.
It's a little different the second time. You feel a little bit more confident, I recall.
Yeah, it is different, but it's also, you experience new things that you didn't experience the first time. So, it was still just as inspiring. Cause we were there collecting stories. So every story we collect is different and unique. And there were stories that we collected this time that were, really, really incredible.
Now, I am already signed up to go next year. Are we carpooling? What are we doing?
Are you? Are you biking or are you a roadie?
I haven't decided. I'm signed up to be a roadie because I bike the Montreal to Portland AIDS ride, so I don't know that I really want to bike two rides in the summer. So I think I'm going to stick with my roadie roots there in California.
Okay, so you weren't there the past 2 years, so you're just getting back into it, I guess?
I am getting back into it. I've been doing this Montreal ride, which it's amazing to do the AIDS Life Cycle, which is, 2,500 riders, 500 crew, and the Montreal Charity Treks ride is 100 riders and maybe 25 crew. It's a little different scale.
Sounds like it, just a little.
It's a little different. I am signed up to go back and join my long-lost gear and tent crew, so it should be good times.
Fun. Well, I will. I hope to see you there. It really just depends if they ask from Driftwood back to collect more stories. But I have two friends who are going as roadies also. So at the very least, you will meet them, and hopefully, I will be able to join you.
Sounds good.
In California.
Well, before we get to I'm from Driftwood, we have to hit a topic that I feel like we've been talking about every week here, and I know in advance that it's one that's near and dear to your heart. We keep going back to the topic of the gays and the comic books.
It is indeed near and dear to my heart.
Because we should tell everyone that one of the reasons that you have a special place in our heart is we envision you as a comic book character. We call you the Harbinger. Because every time you're on the show, there's some sort of cataclysmic disaster. Everything seems to be going okay this time. But, it's early in the chat, so we're not sure yet what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, if of course you ignore the hurricane,
then there's that.
The entire Northeast.
There is that.
If you ignore that.
So yes, no. Nathan Mansky has brought us fires. He has brought us trees falling on hard drives. And now he's brought us a hurricane. I feel that you are quite comfortable, though, envisioning yourself as a comic book character.
Well, sure. I would like to imagine that everyone could easily do that. I just it appears that I need a little more control over my powers. I'm bringing hurricanes and fires and knocking trees over on unsuspecting and undeserving people.
You're still coming into your own. You're still coming into your own powers-wise. You're still learning the whole responsibility and control thing. Nathan, what is it with the gays in the comic books? Did you make it out to Comic-Con there in New York?
No, I've never been. A lot of people a lot of my friends are always surprised, and I'm like, I don't really want to go. I feel a little uncomfortable around people dressed up as superheroes, I've dressed up as Spider-Man for Halloween once, but I don't know.
It's not your thing.
It looks fun. I would like to. Yeah, I would like to go sometime for the experience, but I haven't yet. So maybe 1 year.
All right. Well, we have a two-part question. Part one, what is it with the gays and the comic books? And part two, I feel that you've already designed your costume, so please tell us about it.
Oh, gosh. All right. We'll start with the first one. That's a lot easier. I'm sure there's a lot of theories as to why the gay community like comic books. I think the most obvious one is that there's a secret identity metaphor that you go out and in public you're somebody different. Mm-hmm. So, the gay community knows what it's like to to have a dual, not dual personality, but, you know, dual identity. You're one person in front of one group of people, and you're somebody else in front of another group of people, you know, without the mask. But
yeah,
I think that's why especially so many relate to X-Men, because they're also discriminated against, and, you know, for being different, for being born different, and persecuted by society. So it's, and that was intended when it was created to be a metaphor for people who are socially, discriminated against. So that one's obvious, but, you know, anything with masks or dual identities, I think, is easily relatable to the gay community, to everyone really, but you know, everyone's a little different with different groups of people, so I think that's why superheroes are just, you know, I think they'll be around forever.
And the Nathan Mansky costume?
I have no idea.
Oh, come on. I don't believe. Let's go easier. Cape or no cape?
I would have to go. Capes are kind of cool, actually.
All right.
I don't think, at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, if I had a fashion designer designing something for me, I think I'd have to go no cape.
Okay. And then last comic book question. If you weren't Harbinger, Portent of Doom, I even gave you a little subtitle for the front page of the comic. Any superpower that you would really like, Nathan Mansky?
I would have to go the practical route, and I would like to move things in my mind.
Nice. It's
very, you know, practical and helpful and in your day-to-day routine. So,
all right.
Yeah, you know, you could be a good hero that way, lift cars and save people from falling. And but also, you know, it could help you with, or help me with my sometimes laziness. You know, if I don't want to get up and go get something, I can just bring it to me.
There you go. He went practical, folks. He went practical. All right. I suppose we should perhaps talk about I'm from Driftwood. If you were describing it for the first time, because I actually know with all certainty this is not the first time that you've described I'm from Driftwood to people. If you described it for the first time, how do you keep it fresh in your mind? How do you sell it to people and get them interested?
Basically, what I say now is it's an online archive of LGBT stories from around the world. And usually when I say that, people get it. And it's a pretty simplified version of what it is, but it explains it pretty on point. So is that a good enough short answer?
That was good. You don't even have to do short for us. You're just moving things with your mind and trying to be more practical there. Now, what are we in? We're in year three, year four? Where are we?
There's kind of two different answers. One is it's year 3.5 since the website was launched, but we became a nonprofit. So as a nonprofit, we are right about 1.5 years old.
All right, I like saying year 3.5. Let's say it's year 3.5,
okay.
which it is.
Okay.
Is this where you saw things in between years 3 and 4?
Yes and no.
Let's start with the yes.
Out.
That's okay. No, well, because I'm just going to grill you on it, so there's no copping out here. I made you answer the costume question, Nathan. Give me a break. So go for the yes. This is what parts of this are what you saw happening between years 3 and 4.
It's still going, first of all. I mean, when I first launched it, I had no idea if this would just be like a one-time thing where I get a lot of stories and publish them and that's it, or if it would become an ongoing thing. I didn't really put all my everything into it until after I saw it kind of moving forward by itself, and I saw the potential for growth. And so after that happened in the first year, so now, I mean, I had no idea. If I could go back in time and tell myself, hey, I'm almost to year 4 and it's chugging along and growing and becoming better. And, you know, I would be just really excited. So, you know, and it started just as written stories. And since then we've added video stories, and next year we have plans to, hopefully kind of break into, theater, and we want to do audio stories. So we want to kind of tap into all these different ways of telling stories. Which is, you know, that's basically what all media is how to tell a story. So we want to tap into, you know, like I said, like theater or audio stories and podcasts, radio. We want to do, we have a book right now, but we want to do more books, graphic novels. You know, there's a
nice
superhero thing again.
Nice.
So, yeah, just any way to tell a story, we want to, since all we are stories, we want to tap into all those different forms of media.
How do you think you have changed? So for folks who haven't seen a story, and I don't know how that's possible, but you should go to I'm From Driftwood, but right there on the website, and you can see tons and tons of stories. You have a very specific role in this, in that you're very much, I would call you a shepherd, in that you are gently guiding people along, and I've seen you do this in person. How have you seen yourself change from shepherding the first couple stories to where you are now?
I think I really have been learning how to adapt, because I have basically, starting a nonprofit is starting a small business.
Yeah.
And I've had to change the way I think about things and change the way I think about, because it started as a passion project. And I was like, cool, a website. But now I'm like, oh, wait, I have to, a nonprofit is very misleading. You have to make a profit,
right,
to keep your organization running. So I was kind of, but I have no background or experience in business or the nonprofit world. So I'm learning so much every single day and really just trying to, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm walking forward and I just have to build the ground that I'm walking for or about to walk on.
Yeah.
It's not there and I'm just figuring it out. But then sometimes I have to take a step back and think about where I'm going to be in 10 steps instead of one step, and, you know, then multitasking and figuring out, oh, I'm thinking about these grants that I'm applying for, but I also forgot to edit the story this morning.
Right.
So, you know, it's like you know, multitasking obviously is multiplied.
Yeah.
You know, and also managing people. I'm the only full-time employee or only employee at all. So everything else is volunteers and people who just are passionate about the project and who want to help. And, you know, working with volunteers is pretty different than, or very different than paying someone to do something.
Oh yeah.
So, I've had to manage my own expectations. If I have somebody to help me, I have to understand that, you know, they will help me on their own time.
It's hard to fire a volunteer.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not about firing them. It's about managing my own expectations and understanding that they're helping me.
There you go.
You know, so I try to take responsibility for all of that and try to understand that people are helping me. They're not working for me.
Because sometimes you just have to get up the courage and you have to say, you know what, Marquise, this is just not working out.
Hey now,
what did I just pick him? That was my bad. My bad. That just, it just flowed so naturally. That was weird. Well, there are so
many.
Exactly. There are so many folks out there who want to start nonprofits, who want to get that status, who want to follow their passion. What's one of those things that they, in looking back now, oh gosh, I wish I had known that before it, you know, happened that way that it did?
I would say just understand there's so many resources out there that are created and they're there for people who are starting nonprofits. I really thought that everyone who started a nonprofit knew what they were doing when they got into it, because I didn't know what I was doing when I got into it.
Right.
But there's just, especially if you're in the New York area, but I would imagine that there are a lot in most areas. Because a lot of the states, actually, the state governments have very helpful tools and resources, and now everything's available online. So, but start with your state, because the laws are different from state to state. But just research, because there's so many organizations out there. The government wants your business to succeed, because then they make more money. So, you know, through, you know, it's not all about money, but it's helping the community. So, there's just tons of resources out there. So I'd say the first thing to do is just, you know, research your brain out. Just, you know, Google everything. You never have to really guess what you're doing. Just there's everything out there.
Nice. Well, as you alluded to earlier, you have now completed, a bit ago indeed, your 50-state tour. Every single state, you hit every state?
Yes, all 50 plus Washington, D.C.
Now, keep in mind that there is a correct answer to this question. Your favorite stop on the tour? Keep in mind, there is a correct answer to this question.
Well, I courteously thought about it, you know, but the obvious answer would be Brattleboro, Vermont. And
yes.
That would be, and especially Marlboro College, and we got to go see the studio of the show is so gay.
Yeah, before you made it burn down. Yes, good answer there.
Yeah, well, I had to go scope it out, you know, to see how I needed that fire to happen. So, yeah.
Those latent powers of yours. But no, you really, I can only imagine you just emerged with just the most ridiculous amount of experiences from this.
Yeah, every single day was an experience. You know, and actually you just made me think of another disaster that I brought upon. I remember when we were in Vermont, there was this rainstorm and there was flooding when we left.
Yes.
Or soon after we left. So there's one more.
Yeah.
But yeah, every single stop and because also this was on a personal level, we had never been, I say we, me and Marquise, the videographer and editor, and my brother, the driver, you met both of them.
Yes.
We, on a personal level, we never have seen all these states or places or met most of these people. We had never met you in person. And
right.
So every single day there was a little bit of a shock or a shift or something personally, because it was a new experience every single day. And then at the same time, we're hearing all these stories and working and editing. So it was a demanding process every single day. But, you know, what was so demanding about it also made it so rewarding. Like meeting all these people and seeing all these new places was just incredibly exciting and inspiring.
Now, one of the things that you have in common, just one of the things, because I'm sure there's just too many for us to list, but one of the things that you have in common with Governor Howard Dean is that you have been heavily involved in an enterprise with your brother.
Yes.
So what is your relationship like? Was there a shift in your relationship before you guys worked so closely together and then at the end of the whole experience?
No, we've always been – well, he's – a little background. I have three older brothers, so I'm the youngest, and his name is Nick. He's the oldest. So we have two brothers between us also. So growing up, we were 6 years apart, so we weren't really that close growing up because, you know, what do kids that far apart really have in common?
Right.
So, you know, but once I got to college, then the age difference stopped mattering as much. So we grew pretty close in college. And he was the first person that I ever came out to.
Nice.
So, you know, we have a great relationship. And then on top of that, we lived together. We were roommates here in New York for 7 years until he got, basically at the end of the story tours when he moved out. Not because we got so sick of each other.
Right.
But because he and his girlfriend got engaged and they moved in together. So, you know, we wouldn't have done it if we knew that we wouldn't be able to get along, or at least know that we would make it out okay. So, and that's another thing, is like we're brothers, so of course we're going to, you know, when your arm's length away for 4 months in a van, we're going to fight.
I bet.
You know, but we also know, like, well, yeah, we fought for 30 years, so it's, you know, we know that we're okay. You know, we also know that we're best friends, so.
And at least the scenery is going to change for all the fights.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, remember the Grand Canyon fight?
That's funny. See, my brother and I don't have that.
Yeah, then the kitchen fight or the living room fight.
See, my brother and I just have all we have are New Jersey fights. That's all we got. So you can describe them in much more detail. All right, so you did the story tour. There's a book. There's an e-book that people can get, correct?
Yeah, we actually just launched the e-book. It was probably 2 weeks ago. And it's 51 stories from the website, some of my personal favorites, and I pulled them from the site and separated them into chapters based on the theme. So there's, for example, there's a coming out chapter. There's a chapter of stories before 1970, which is my personal favorite chapter. You know, love and relationships, first crush that you had as a kid. So, yeah, I think there's seven chapters.
Nice.
And, and it's only, $3. So,
it's not even $3. It's $2.99. You gotta sell
right.
It, man.
So there you go. It's $2.99. It's for less than $3.
There you go.
51 stories that could change your life.
I'm from driftwood.com is where you can find that. So that's a good thing. And now, here's the real deal. Nathan Mansky, as the world knows, is just a champion, a world-class runner.
Wow.
is that true?
World-class runner. You, yeah, sure. I'll run with that. I'm from Driftwood, since we're a nonprofit, where we put a running team together for the Philadelphia Marathon. And I'm based in New York, but it was too late to get into the New York Marathon, and very difficult. So it's our first charity run, so we put together a small group, and we're raising money for that. And I was tricked into registering, because originally I was gonna work that day and manage everyone's gear and make sure everything's, you know, get the photographers to shoot the runners and you know, manage the after party and manage the day basically. And one of my board members and his boyfriend, who are both running the marathon or the half marathon, they insisted that I take part in the run, and I argued with them and told them very seriously that I am not a runner. I hate running. Whenever I run, it's like for a mile and I'm done. You know, it's like a warm up before I go to the gym or something. And I never ever run long distances. Hate it. Won't do it. And as I'm explaining all this to them, one of them was like, "What's your birth date?" And I was like, "What? What? No, I'm not going to tell you what my birth date is. You're not signing me up. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not giving you anything.
This is trickery."
Yeah. So they ended up acquiring all my information, and I got an email notification that said, "Thanks for registering for the Philadelphia Marathon."
Nice.
So, you know, I have a very diligent board member or enthusiastic or somebody who is, maybe he was mad at me or something, but he signed me up. But so I've been training, and I'm glad they signed me up, because I've actually learned to enjoy running now.
Oh, great.
And yeah, so it's great. I'm glad they did it. And I it's just a couple weeks away. I just ran 9 miles on Saturday, and yeah, it's going really well.
And how were you feeling on Sunday?
Pretty good. You know, I a little sore, but fine. I'm just following this training program. They said they recommend 12 to 16 weeks of training, and they signed me up when I only had 8 weeks.
Okay.
So I'm on an accelerated training program.
Yes, because I don't know if you know, that 8 weeks, that's actually less than 12 to 16 weeks.
It sure is, yeah. That's what I was. I tried to use that as my argument against them signing me up. It didn't do any good. So,
well, how can folks contribute towards what you're doing? Because the money is going to a pretty darn good cause.
It is. So if anyone wants to support the team, we're trying to raise a couple thousand dollars, and they can just go to imfromdriftwood.com/marathon, and there's a donate button on there. So, and also, if anyone is in Philadelphia or in the area, we're going to have an after party after the run from noon to 4 at Taboo Sports Bar.
Nice. Well, we will make a This Show Is So Gay contribution, of course. We'll get to that by the end of the day, because we are happy to support you doing this, and we are already feeling your pain.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and all the runners will too.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I support you even as I'm thinking, and I'll just say it out loud. God, this Nathan guy's an idiot, because he wished for the wrong superpower.
I should have run. I should hope for to be able to fly or to run fast.
I'm thinking one of those might be better than moving things with your mind, unless you're moving the finish line closer to you, Nathan. You really need to think these things true. You got to think them through, man.
Well, no. Like I'm an expert comic book fan, so I know that if you can move things with your mind, I can move my own body with my mind.
Okay.
I can levitate myself to the finish line.
Good save, Nathan. Good save. That was a good save. Any other big events coming up that we should know about? I think the marathon training is quite enough for now, but anything else we should know?
Right now, that's basically it. We're still pushing the book for the rest of the year. The holidays are coming up, so it's a great, because we have a paper version also, so you can buy it for someone that way if you'd like. But yeah, the book and the marathon is pretty much going to take us to the end of the year. And next year we have a lot of exciting stuff planned. We're starting back to 50 states. We're doing a 50-state ambassador program where we're going to reach out to people in all 50 states, not travel to all 50 states. I think once was enough of that for me.
Yeah, I think
for
so.
For the immediate future anyway. But we want people to start helping us find stories. So it's not only our small team here in New York, but people have, you know, if they have any interest in getting to know their LGBT community and their towns. It's great for that. Any videographers or editors who want some experience or, you know, it's just a great opportunity to collect stories and meet people. So if anyone's interested in becoming a Driftwood ambassador, they can also go to the website and there's information on there about that.
That's a resume builder.
Yeah, absolutely. And we post all the video stories on our website and on our YouTube channel. So a lot of people will see it. Some of them are posted on the Huffington Post Gay Voices page. So, yeah. And also it's awesome hearing all these stories from people.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
It's just a great experience.
So I have a shot at being the Vermont ambassador.
You absolutely do.
That's very exciting.
You know quite a few, you're well connected in your community.
Yeah, that's what they tell me. What are you going to do? It's a small community, Nathan. We're trying. We're trying here. All right. So give everybody the website that they should be going to for all of these amazing things.
I'm from driftwood.com, the main one for all the stories. If you want to buy the book or the ebook, for less than $3, go to imfromdriftwood.com/book. And if you want to help support the I'm from Driftwood Philadelphia Marathon team, then just go to imfromdriftwood.com/marathon.
Perfect. Perfect. Now, would it help you to do some sort of role play where you're Nathan and I'm Marquise and you rehearse that very uncomfortable conversation?
What uncomfortable conversation?
Oh, I thought we were letting him go. I'm sorry. Did I take that too far? That's my bad.
Marquise is a godsend. He has consistently been helping us.
All right. So we should keep him.
The longest person who's been helping me on the website. So, yeah, he's going to listen to this, and he's like, what
I love it. I love it. Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, well, you should keep him then, Nathan. I don't know why you're talking about getting rid of him. It sounds like he's someone who's really integral to I'm from Driftwood. So, I mean, I think that's just one of those things you learn as you progress with the nonprofit, that you should keep some of these people and not try to get rid of them. It's fine. It's fine. All right. Everybody needs to stroll on over to imfromdriftwood.com, and that's where all the stories are and the link to the marathon, and buy a book. It's Hanukkah's coming up fast, folks. We got to get a book. It becomes quite the stocking stuffer. I think I mixed my holidays there. That's okay. Nathan Mansky, you know we adore you, right?
Well, I hope so, and we adore you too.
All right. Let's not let another year go by before we have you back on the show. We want to hear how the marathon goes.
All right. Well, I you have my number, so whenever you want me on the show.
We'll do it. We'll do it. Nathan
right.
Mansky from I'm from Driftwood, a big hi and hello to Marquise and everybody who's doing such great work over there. It's just such a great site to collect voices, and that's what our show is about, is highlighting different people's voices, and you're doing it in such a different way and clearly in a way that affects so many people. So we have loved watching this progress, and we will love continuing to watch this progress into its next phase.
Well, great. Thank you, Ken.
All the best, Nathan.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, we have a little bit of time left, so let's hit some of those top LGBT news stories that we were all reading about this week. First, a shout-out to Brad Pitt. And, you know, how often do I get to do a shout-out to Brad Pitt out loud that you all can hear? There's different stuff that happens in my head. Brad Pitt has committed to donating $100,000 to the Human Rights Campaign's National Marriage Fund in an effort to give the group the bump that they need to pass same-sex marriage initiatives in multiple states, including Maryland. The actor has offered to double any contributions made to the fund in the next 24 hours, and that starts just yesterday on Halloween. So you have time right now if you're hearing this today. He wrote in an email, quote, "It's unbelievable to me that people's lives and relationships are literally being voted on in a matter of days. In Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, and Washington, voters will go to the polls to decide if gay and lesbian couples, our friends and neighbors, are worthy of the same protections as everyone else. But that's the system we have, and I'm not going to back down from the fight for loving and committed couples to have the ability to marriage," end quote. Thank you, Brad Pitt. That $100,000 will likely go a long way. But, you know, what goes probably even a longer way are just the news stories that we put out there about these celebrities who are putting their money where their mouth is, but also, you know, just using their mouth is a very big deal. Of course, using their mouth to say that they are in support of the same rights for LGBT people as everybody else. So there's a letter that was published in the Florida Times Union this week. And there's a ballot initiative going on there. There's a anti-discrimination ordinance that they're trying to pass in Jacksonville, Florida. And I want to read you this letter, and this is one of those that you might not have heard about. So this is a letter that was written to the editorial section there. This is from Sonia Harp, who lives in St. Augustine, and this is her letter. A recent letter to the Times Union stated that 68 of America's 70 largest cities offer protection against gay and lesbian discrimination. Therefore, Jacksonville leaders brand Jacksonville as backward and intolerant by not passing this anti-discrimination ordinance. Chicago is one of these 68 cities. On Sunday, Chicago reached a grim milestone of 435 homicides this year. All of Chicago's laws and ordinances are not making it a moral, tolerant, or safe city. Should anyone discriminate against gays? Of course not. Hopefully, most people will do what is right without having a law telling them not to discriminate. We have enough laws on the books. More laws will only help lawyers. I feel Jacksonville leaders showed common sense by not putting unnecessary laws or ordinances on the books just to please a few people. That's from Sonia Harp, St. Augustine, Florida. So, I read this letter to you all because, holy cow, does this letter encapsulate so much of what is problematic about the discourse about passing anti-discrimination ordinances. First of all, equating in any way anti-discrimination with homicides, not good. Not good. We don't necessarily want to put those in the same breath because they're categorically different. Second, the idea that people should just be doing what is right. Well, that's, you know, an idea that didn't fly so well in the civil rights era. It didn't go over so well in the 60s. And this country realized, no, we actually do need laws on the books to codify the fact that you can't actually discriminate against other people. So that is why we need these laws on the books. And lastly, this idea of putting laws on the books just to please a few people, which is the end of her letter there, the idea is not about pleasing a few people, it's about protecting a few people. And when we're talking about underrepresented populations, folks who don't have a voice, yes, this is why we need the laws in the books, because there's just a few people who don't have that majority say to get the protections that they need to feel safe in our community. So, Sonia Harp, I disagree with you, but I appreciate you putting this letter out there in the Florida Times Union, because it really gives us a nice jumping off point of everything that's wrong with the discourse right now on protecting everyone in our communities. Lastly, we turn our attention to Ohio, and not just for election reasons, though, as Governor Dean said, we got a lot of work to do there. Two students at Salina High School in Mercer County, Ohio, wore t-shirts that read Lesbian 1 and Lesbian 2, but they were forced to remove them on the school's Twin Day last week. Now, here's the funny part. Assistant Principal Phil Metz forced all the students to remove the shirts because they were political. Yet, the school promotes a pro-life club whose t-shirts feature a fetus and promote pro-life positions. Also, the school recently hosted a Romney campaign event at which Representative Paul Ryan, the nominee for Vice President of the United States, spoke. But again, these students had to remove their shirts because they were, quote, political. I would perhaps put out there that there might be a slight, tiny bit of hypocrisy there. I'm just putting that out there. There in Salina High School in Mercer County, Ohio. The students in the school are consulting lawyers. We'll keep you posted on that one. So that wraps things up for this week's episode. Obviously, a huge, huge thank you to Governor Howard Dean. An enormous thank you to Nathan Mansky from I'm From Driftwood. And, you know, the biggest thank you of all to you guys for listening. Without you listening, it'd just be me talking to Governor Dean and to Nathan Mansky, which I have no problem with that, but I like that you guys listen as well. And you send emails with your opinions and your requests for guests, and you can send those on over to ken@theshowsogay.com. Amazing things coming up in the next couple weeks. Just stroll over to theshowsogay.com to learn all about that. And hey, check us out on Facebook. approaching 3,000 likes on Facebook, you become part of that community by just typing in "The Show Is So Gay" and liking us there. That wraps things up for this week's show. Get out there. Be inspired. Open yourself to be inspired by Governor Howard Dean, by Nathan Mansky, the idea that every single person has a voice that they can use to make a difference in this world. It doesn't matter if you are a governor. It doesn't matter if you are someone who wants to put their story out there on I'm From Driftwood.com. Use your voice the way that you know how to use it to make a difference in this world, to raise up the voices of underrepresented populations, to make our community safer, and, you know, just to make everything better. Can we just go with making everything better? And while you're doing these incredible things, while you're using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Your broken heart and soul. And what do you do with the left over you? And how do you know when to let go? Where does the good go? Where does the good go?